Our scripture reading for this morning is Daniel 1. As I read this passage, notice that even though the kingdoms of Israel and Judah were being taken into captivity for their sins, God still preserved a remnant of those who remained faithful. God did not exclude the faithful from the punishment, but provided a means for them to avoid defiling themselves with their captors' customs and culture. The parallels for us today should encourage us to remain faithful in difficult circumstances as well. Please follow along with me as I read Daniel 1 from the NASB. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles, youths in whom there was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. The king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them from the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, and to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. And the commander of the officials said to Daniel, "I am afraid of the Lord my king, who has appointed your food and your drink. For why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you would make me forfeit my head to the king." But Daniel said to the overseer, whom the commander of the officials had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days, and let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence and the appearance of the youths who are eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see." So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, their appearance seemed better, and they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and the wine they were to drink, and kept giving them vegetables. As for these 4 youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. Then at the end of the days which the king had specified for presenting them, the commander of the officials presented them before Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and out of them all, not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service. As for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were in all his realm. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king.
You know, I've been hearing in the news, it seems like frequently, about these driverless cars. And things aren't going so well. Because usually when they're in the news, it's because something went very wrong. So I think they need to spend a little more time testing them. The driverless cars reminded me of something that I heard about when I was much younger. Supposedly, there was the first fully automated airplane flight. And the announcement came on to the intercom at the beginning of the flight, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first fully automated airplane flight. We understand you might have some concerns, but due to all the latest technology and extensive testing, we are confident that nothing can go wrong. Nothing can go wrong. Nothing can go wrong. Nothing can go wrong. Not enough testing there in advance. Well, this first screen showing the Babylon Academy servant training, I thought later, you know, that's really kind of a little bit possibly too dressed up, but seemed like it helped to make the point that these young men were being taught, hence the chalkboard and the word academy up there. But they were in a very, very difficult situation, and they were in that situation because of sin. It's very simple. Israel and Judah had completely disregarded the word of the Lord. You might recall that there were never any good kings for Israel, the northern kingdom, not one. And in the southern kingdom of Judah, there were some, kind of a roller coaster situation. You'd have a good one, and then two bad ones, and then a good one, and then three bad ones, and, you know, et cetera. Some of the good guys after the early three were Hezekiah and Josiah. Some of them were a mixture. And this whole thing of idolatry and disobeying the Lord just kept on happening. The pagan gods from around them promoted things like child sacrifice and immorality and all kinds of evil things, and they would get involved with that. Well, back in Deuteronomy 28, there were some things that were spelled out very clearly. The word of the Lord said, if you obey, you will be blessed. That's the short version of the first section of that chapter. But then the next couple of sections were very severe. If you disobey, this is what will happen. And it was severe. Those of you that read those portions this past week preparing for this material probably were a little bit jolted by the things. Here's a verse from Deuteronomy 28. This is a result of disobedience and sin. Your sons and your daughters shall be given to another people while your eyes look on and yearn for them continually, but there will be nothing you can do. Now, don't dwell on this too long, as it will be downright depressing. But just briefly, let yourself imagine that somebody comes along, they take your children away from you, they're hauling them away, and you're unable to do anything about it. It sounds awful. In some ways, it sounds worse than death. Another verse from Deuteronomy 28. The Lord will bring a nation against you from afar, from the end of the earth, as the eagle swoops down, a nation whose language you shall not understand. And that's what happened. The Babylonians came and destroyed the city and the area, took captives, did much destruction. And Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were among those taken. Some of the other things that were mentioned in that chapter of Deuteronomy, the results of sin, were starvation, cannibalism, mental insanity, destruction of family units, loss of property, physical illness, severe boils, in addition to the sight of one's children being carried away. So this is why we find Daniel Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah in Babylon because of sin. This is the judgment of God. There were a number of different times when there were groups of people taken to Babylon. In a period of about 19 years, there were three times when the Babylonian army came in and said, "You're going with me." And they took whoever they wanted. They left some there. And in this first group, Josephus says that there were 70 young men that were carefully selected because they looked like prime individuals, probably in their mid-teens, maybe around 15 or so. And so they were taken with the specific thought in mind of teaching them, training them in the Babylonian culture and ways, and make so that they'd be suitable helpers to work directly for the king. We don't have any way of double-checking Josephus, but that gives us some kind of an idea. He probably had that based on oral tradition that was passed down. So, 4 out of 70 are faithful. They want to follow God. They're not just going with the overall plan. Now, it's a ways from Jerusalem to Babylon. It looks like between 500 and 600 miles by air, but of course, that wasn't their route at that time. And so it was much farther than that to travel on the route that would work on ground. If you go direct, you're going across mountains, you're going across desert. It's just not feasible at all to go straight from one to the other. So they were hundreds and hundreds of miles away from their origin. So these guys are there for the purpose of being trained. That's why the king's soldiers gathered them and brought them. He's looking for the cream of the crop. He wants the ones that are young, good-looking, intelligent, discerning, no physical defects. They're not limping. Everything's good. Both eyes are good. He wants the best. So, once they're gathered, they all get assigned new names. It was pretty shocking to me to learn that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego weren't the original names. You know, because from the time I was small, I heard about this story and about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, those names are just so fun. They're so different. They just stick with you. So then when I found out that really isn't who they were. They were really Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. I was kind of disappointed in a way, you know. But those names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, replaced the original names, and there was a reason for that. The original names had ties to the one true God. Within the names, there was reminder. There were godly names. And these new names were, I guess you could call them godly, they were false godly. They had ties to the pagan gods of the Babylonian culture. And Daniel concluded, as they're in this orientation, they're getting renamed, they're getting instructed, they're having to learn a new language. He concluded that this thing about the food that they were supposed to eat just wasn't going to work. It wasn't God's will for him to eat this. Now, there are a number of possibilities. pretty good likelihood that some of the food that they were serving was not kosher, wasn't in the Jewish approved list of things that you can eat. And there was a strong possibility that this food was being offered to idols. And they had all kinds of different gods and idols. And then there's also the possibility that he might have had this next verse in mind from Proverbs. When you sit down to dine with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you and put a knife to your throat if you are a man of great appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, for it is deceptive food. In other words, there's strings attached when you're getting food that comes right from the king. Well, these are all possible factors, but he was convinced that if he ate this, he would be defiled. And so he asked the overseer for different food, and the overseer indicated that he was afraid for his life if this didn't go well. And Daniel said that, could we have 10 days to try this out? He appealed for 10 days, and of course it was granted, and he and his three friends got vegetables and water while the others were eating the same food that the king got. And as we read, at the end of their training, after the 3 years of training at the Babylonian Academy, they were at the top of the class. They were 10 times smarter, 10 times more able. The term in our reading was just 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were in all his realm, in all the king's realm. So these guys came through strong. Let's look at some observations from this familiar story, this familiar event that happened. And God helped Daniel and his friends to live above his circumstances. They were in an evil culture. You might know some people that are in an evil culture. You might be in an evil culture where good is being called evil and evil is being called good. I'll take it a step further. You are in an evil culture. And God still can work. He can still help. He can still provide, as he did in this case, for these men. You know, I was thinking about these names. They got relabeled. Maybe some of you have gotten labeled. I was involved in labeling. In grade school, I was on both ends of it. I got labeled with some pretty unhandy nicknames, and I doled out some myself, so it was probably a case of sowing and reaping. Some of them I won't repeat. Here's some that I think will be okay. There was a case where somebody was nicknamed Dimwit. There was another that was H-bomb, and then there was one that was known as Slop Bucket. Now, these aren't just things that were said once in passing as an insult. These were names that got used for people continuously by the kids in the class, week after week, month after month. Yesterday in church history class, Pastor Ike shared with us that there was a significant church history figure in his younger years that was referred to as a dumb ox. So there's nothing new under the sun. Centuries pass and people still label each other with these unhelpful things. When my wife was young, she was told she was dumb. And when she expressed interest in going to college, She was told by a family member that you'll never be able to do it. You'll never make it. You're not smart enough. Well, this kind of stuff that comes at us can be very discouraging, especially to young people. They start to believe some of what's contained in these messages of disdain. But with God's help, it's possible to move forward. We don't need to let this kind of stuff drag us down. And our four Hebrew friends didn't. You know, these labels that get pinned on us sometimes, they can have connection to some kind of a shortcoming or a weakness. But we shouldn't allow that to overwhelm us, to rule us, or to use them as an excuse to give up. And it's never good to use a weakness as an excuse to sin. You know, I just can't help myself. It's just the way I am. That's what they told me at school. I'm going to get myself in trouble with somebody. But ADD, have you read the characteristics for ADD? We all have it. I'm looking at the teacher over here. She's not frowning, so. I mean, various degrees, obviously. But you get labeled like that, and it can just be a ticket to whatever. Well, I can't help it. I got ADD, you know. So the kid is throwing stuff across the room or doing whatever, you know, disobeying. Oh, but I have ADD. So we should never allow that. We shouldn't tolerate that either. And these guys did not allow their surroundings and the pressure to conform. They didn't let that push them into wrong activities. They kept their focus on God, and they're a wonderful example of individuals who were committed to doing what God wanted, no matter what the cost. They're a great reminder that we don't have to give in to temptation. 1 Corinthians 10:13 tells us that no temptation has overtaken you but such as is common to man, and God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but will with the temptation provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. That's a promise. And whatever our limitations are, we can cling to that promise. Sadly, we've got far more examples in Scripture of people that failed big time. We got more of those examples than we do of people that succeeded. Now, Joseph and his sterling example in Genesis is in league with Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, but there's not lots of people in that category. You know, all around Daniel and his friends, there were others. Remember, they were in a group, a large group. And there were others that were just going along with it. They weren't going to go against the flow. Now, going against the flow is always harder. The water is moving this way. All the other fish are moving this way. Am I doing this right? No. No, it's this way. Which way is it? I'm looking at the monitor. Going this way. And the one fish is going that way. It's much more difficult. They were separated from their families. Now, this is an intense situation. They don't have any contact. They're completely separated. And yet, they followed the true and living God. They had decided in their own hearts that they were believing in the one true God. You know, it's been said that God doesn't have any grandchildren. And it's true, He doesn't. Just because your parents were strong in the faith, or believers does not guarantee that you will be. It has to be an individual decision. And obviously, these four men had decided. They had made this their own. They had embraced the same faith as their families. They lived above the circumstances, even though it was extremely difficult. Now, last week, we heard from Lamentations. Jeremiah, the weeping prophet, he's seeing all this difficulty unfold. He's alive during this time. Pastor Wright shared that he's convinced that Daniel is the one that's already in Babylon that's interceding or putting in the good word for Jeremiah. Jeremiah wrote this, "The Lord's loving kindnesses indeed never cease, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I have hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the person who seeks him." This is the kind of mindset that these young men had. Well, God enabled Daniel to appeal wisely to authority. That's a big part of what goes on in this chapter. And in doing that, he used God-honoring words. He used words that came from a clean heart. You know, the right choice of words is important. It's good to have accurate words. There's more, though. The delivery of those words is significant. Centuries before Ephesians 4:29 was written, I think Daniel gave a good example of that. "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear." Now, the tricky thing is you can have a perfect selection of words in your head that you want to share with somebody, but if it's not done well with the right body language, the right facial expression, the right tone of voice, you can totally negate the words that you had chosen. As those other elements actually surpass in the communication realm, they surpass in influence the words that are used. The words are important. You got to have the right words. But if you don't have the rest of the package, it can be a major problem. We could say that God-honoring words are only honoring to God when they're said in the right way. Words can have a great definition in the dictionary, but if they're said poorly, with an edge on them or in sarcasm or something, they will not deliver helpful information to the other person. Respect is a big part of this. Daniel was respectful for the man in charge. He could understand why the guy didn't really want to do this change of menu thing, because he might lose his head. That's kind of important. And you know from the rest of the story as you go through Daniel that King Nebuchadnezzar wasn't at all bothered by just executing people. If they got in his way or if they were a problem, they weren't cooperating, they weren't going along with the game plan, just get rid of them. But Daniel showed respect. Respect's all about interest and concern for the other person. It's possible to have all the right words, say all the right things, but if there's not respect for that person, the words will be meaningless. In the Peacemaker material, which we use periodically in our Wednesday night Bible club and then also from time to time in Sunday school class, we get this information about respect. This is just some practical aspects of how you can relay respect to somebody. Look respectfully at the person who is talking. Stop yourself from interrupting others when they are talking. Use self-control to listen when others say controversial things. Repeat back to others what you think they said. Listen for the truth and try to understand the other person's point of view, even though you do not agree with it. Now, these are some practical methods. However, just like you can have the exact words, the right words, with the right dictionary definition, you can go through all these motions and be thinking, okay, I gotta look right, I gotta say it right, I gotta ask the right questions, da 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 da. But in your heart, you don't give two hoots about this person. That'll come through. So there's got to be truly a heart of respect and concern about the other person. And prayer and dependence upon God is the only way that that's going to happen. Because naturally, I don't really care about you. I don't. I care about me. That's my first inclination. That's my default position. How will this work out for me? And until we ask the Lord to help us think about, oh, what about how this is going to affect them? We won't really be genuinely concerned about the other person. Well, of course, Daniel presented a thoughtful alternative to the original requirement. You know, when he heard about what they were supposed to be eating, he didn't just say, well, you know, I'm not eating it. You can't make me. I'll die. He didn't do that. He presented an alternative, made a positive request. It reminds me of Romans 12:21. What a short, powerful verse. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So simple and yet so profound, and he demonstrated that for us. Well, God bless Daniel's obedience. You know, he granted favor with the overseer. And that's ultimately the reason for the success, because God was at work in a heart. He enabled Daniel to make a good request, to be respectful and thoughtful. But God worked in the heart of the overseer. It specifically tells us that in verse 9, God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander. God did it. A week and a half ago, I made an error in judgment. I failed a driving test of a much different nature. And I ended up on my face on the concrete driveway, and my glasses were in shambles. And my face wasn't looking too good either. There's still a little bit of evidence remaining. My wife called the eye doctor the next morning, and after it was evident that I was going to be all right, he didn't have to take me somewhere, do something major. She calls the eye doctor and asks for an appointment. Well, it'll be 2 weeks. 2 weeks? And after she explained the situation a little bit, the Lord granted her favor with the scheduling person, and they got us in right away, that same day. That's what happens when God intervenes and grants favor with somebody. We could have, you know, there's all kinds of things that could have been said. I don't, you've got to do this. But the Lord worked it out. When a man's ways are pleasing to the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Proverbs 16, 7 tells us. Well, there are more blessings. God provided good health. You know, it clearly says that these four young men were doing great. God's the one that gives health. Reminds me of Proverbs 3, 7 and 8. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. Being in right relationship with God brings health. He provided wisdom and discernment. God gave Daniel amazing insight and wisdom so that he could speak in a way that was understood. He could help solve problems and understand lots of things. Proverbs says that a man skilled in his work, do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. And God provided supernatural ability. God gifted Daniel with the ability to interpret dreams and visions. And even though he did that on numerous occasions, he never took the credit. He always said, it's God. It's God that's doing this. Now, we've seen that the parallel that Daniel was living in an evil culture and we're living in an evil culture. The details are different, obviously. But there are some parallels, to be sure. And it's likely that you will find yourself confronted by people who promote evil. People that call good evil and evil good. We're living in a day of redefinition of all kinds of things. It's amazing. I mean, when somebody asks a well-known politician if they could define what a woman is, and they can't, that's a problem. And that's the day that we're in. But God can help. He will help those that call on Him. You might be in a setting where there's a lot of pressure being brought on you to force you to conform to what somebody else wants you to do. But like Daniel, you can calmly request an alternate activity. Depending on God is of utmost importance. He's the one that provides the strength and the ability to do the right thing in a difficult situation. He's the one that provides the right words, the right attitude to make it possible to appeal to those in authority. So the four guys did really well in their class. They came out at the top of the class. They got a really good grade. They also got a really good grade in God's training school. Resisting temptation, they got an A. Appealing wisely, they got an A. Obeying God, they got an A. Depending on God, they got an A. You'll have tests. You had tests last week. You'll have tests this week. You'll have tests. And how will you respond? I'm sure that I wouldn't want my test grades up there on the screen for you to see. And you probably don't want yours up there either. We often fail to depend on God, instead rely on self. And when you realize that that's what's been going on, here's what you do. Ask God to forgive you for being self-reliant and ask Him to help you. He wants to do that. He wants you to rely on Him, fully depend on Him, and trust Him completely.